Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
Before we begin, we would like to thank 6 Point Builders for their support of our show. 6 Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome everyone to another episode of Revolution Recap. We have a interesting midweek episode for you today. There's not going to be a preview for this weekend's Philadelphia Union game, but salary data did release, so it is a great day for roster rule nerds. We'll be going into the New England Revolution contracts and breaking down their roster and what it means for the team, how much salary cap space do they have. I know we were asked to have a off-season episode of this, but we didn't have the data, and the data was leaked yesterday. Apparently, it's going to be released later today, today being Thursday, May 16th. But since we have the data, we decided to throw this in the midweek episode. Then following that, Seth Maycomber is going to be talking to Miguel Gallardo of Apple TV, so make sure you stick around for that. Before we get into all that, we want to tell you about our sponsor, BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all of your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, NHL playoffs, and of course, Major League Soccer. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams, including the New England Revolution. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet online, where the game starts. All right, let's get into the salary data. And I know this is very complicated. I learned the roster rules, so you don't have to. But I do have to kind of explain a little bit of the roster rules to make sure everyone is kind of on the same page exactly of what we're talking about. Basically, the roster is comprised of 30 spots. 20 of them are on the senior roster. 10 of them are on the supplemental roster. If you've been listening to this show for a long time, you've listened to us talk about roster rule nerd stuff, the supplemental roster does not count against the salary cap. So I'm going to be focusing on basically the 20 spots on the senior roster. The supplemental roster is basically minimum salary players, super draft picks, homegrown players, Rev 2 promotions, kind of a youth development type spots. Those are, in theory, that's what these spots are used for. It not always goes that way, but that's essentially what the supplemental roster is for. In terms of the salary cap, I'm going to use the term salary budget. That's basically what a salary cap is. And this number is lower than what a team actually spends because most players, designated players, U22 players will have a cap hit that is lower than what their salary is. It's an allocated amount, and I'll get into that in a minute. And also some players have their salaries bought down with allocation money. I'll get to that in a second. But in theory, the maximum salary budget charge for a player is $683,750. So in theory, a player's salary can't be above that. That's the maximum salary for a player with those exemptions, as I talked about. Now, if you're a designated player, like if you're Lionel Messi, he makes $12 million in salary, $20 million in total compensation, which includes bonuses, signing bonuses, incentives, et cetera, et cetera. Either way, against the cap, Lionel Messi, his cap hit is $683,750. So I'm going to use that 683 number again and again and again, but that's essentially the maximum cap hit for any player. But you can be paid whatever you want. If you're a designated player, it's going to be moved down to that 683. And then on top of that, you also have young designated players, which are designated players that are below a certain age. They have a lower cap hit. So for a designated player that is 20 years or younger, they would have a salary hit of $150,000, whereas a young designated player that is, I think, between the ages of 21 and 24 or 23, I'd have to look it up exactly, but that's $200,000. And then you have a U22 player, which essentially is similar to the young designated player. The only real difference is that they are limited in salary. They can't make over a certain amount, but they have an unlimited transfer fee. They have an automatic hit of $150,000 or $200,000, again, depending on if they are above the age of 21. So with all that being said, we'll get into more of that later. But on top of that, if you are not a designated player or if you are not a U22 player, if you have a transfer fee associated with you, that amount is divided by the number of guaranteed years on the contract and allocated to your annual budget charge. So we'll take Kendrick Rabas, for example. We don't know what his transfer fee is, but there is an undisclosed fee associated with bringing in Rabas. So because he's not a designated player and because he is not a, a U22 player, basically you would take that undisclosed fee divided by the number of guaranteed years in his contract. So that's 3 years. And then you would apply it to his salary, which we'll talk about later. So if he was, for example, if that fee was $300,000, his cap hit would be increase $100,000 per year because that's how many years he has on his guaranteed contract. So that's DPs, that's U22s, that's young designated players. On top of that, you can buy down players but with allocation money. So what that means is, let's say you have a player that is making $900,000 a year. You can apply allocation money to their salary and get them below that 683,750 number, the maximum salary you're talking about. And in fact, if they exceed that amount, you have to buy them down. You have to get them, quote unquote, compliant by essentially buying their salary down so they are below the maximum threshold. So in theory, all of these players, designated players, U22s, TAM players that are above that 683,750, all those players are, in theory, have a salary below the cap because they've either been bought down or they have a designation with them that brings them down to below that 683. So there's two types of allocation money. There's TAM, which I just let out a second ago. That's called targeted allocation money. That has to be spent on new contracts, new signings, extensions. Basically, this was created so teams would have money, like a pot of money, used to go out and buy new players. Then there's also GAM, which is called general allocation money. That can be spent however you want. This is essentially just extra cap space. It's a little bit more unlimited. And you can apply allocation money to people below that 683 number. So if you have someone that makes $600,000, you can put some GAM towards them. But that's essentially the difference between GAM and TAM. There's also extra GAM for missing playoffs, transfers of players. So when the Revs sold Matt Turner and Tajon Buchanan, they got some GAM. It doesn't apply for designated players, but non-designated players, when you sell them to European teams or teams outside of MLS, you get GAM in the form of that transfer. You get a portion, a very small portion of that transfer fee in the case of Turner and Tajon. That gets converted to GAM up to about $1 million. And then qualifying for Champions Cup. Obviously, MLS wants their teams to do well in Champions Cup, so the Revs got a little bit of GAM for that this year as well. In years of expansion drafts, you can get GAM, like $50,000 in GAM if a player is selected, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And also you can trade GAM back and forth. That'll be relevant in a second. So GAM is essentially just extra cap space, and you can use it to buy down players. TAM is you have to use them on extensions or new signings or players on basically you're trying to get them for acquisition costs. So now that we've talked about what allocation money is, let's talk about what the salary budget is. So the salary budget this year, it's $5.47 million in MLS. So that's basically, you know, if this was a capped league, that's essentially the salaries. Again, we're going to go way over that number here in a second. I'll tell you why. Then on top of that, we have $2,585,000 in GAM and $2.4 million in TAM. Now, in years past, TAM has been higher and GAM has been lower. MLS is phasing out TAM because essentially what they were finding was that teams were overspending on players from outside of the league, while players who were kind of career MLSers basically were never getting huge pay jumps. And so this is kind of being swung the other way. So kind of more domestic players can get some higher salaries over time. So the way you kind of can think of this is teams have an additional $5 million in allocation money to buy down a player's charge. That's kind of the technical way to think about it. I think the easier way to look at this is that teams have their cap space plus GAM plus TAM, and that equals the total amount of resources. So what I mean by that is
$5.47 million in cap space, plus $2.585 million in GAM, plus $2.4 million in TAM, is about $10.455 million in total resources. And again, our total salary is going to be way above this because designated players get paid way, 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 way more. But against that 10.455 number, they only are going to get $683,000 against that cap, right? All right. So that's kind of what we're looking at here. The Revs have 10.455 million in resources that they can use. Now, again, I mentioned you can trade GAM. So I've gone through and I've looked up all the ways the Revs have traded GAM in and out. And this is what we have. Last year, between last year and this year, the GAM that they've traded, they traded $275,000 to acquire Dave Romney last year. That's in 2024 GAM. They also spent, I think, $250,000 in 2023 GAM to get him. So in 2024 GAM alone, $275,000 is gone to acquire Dave Romney. They also traded $50,000 in 2024 GAM to move up in the 2023 Super Draft to select Joshua Bulma. They also traded $275,000 in GAM to acquire Nick Lima this past offseason. So in total, they've traded $600,000 in 2024 GAM. So are you with me? They've also brought in GAM. They traded an international roster spot last year to Charlotte. They got $100,000 in GAM this year. They traded their two Super Draft picks, their first and third selections, to Minnesota United this year. They brought in $100,000 in GAM. They traded Jordan Adebayo-Smith to Minnesota. They brought in $125,000 in GAM. They traded an international roster spot to Charlotte this year. They brought in $75,000 in GAM for this year. They're also bringing in $100,000 in GAM next year. So they're essentially creating $100,000 in cap space next year with this trade as well. They traded the Discovery player rights to Peter Musa to FC Dallas. That's $100,000 in GAM. And then they also traded two international roster spots before the season to the LA Galaxy for $350,000 in GAM. So in total, they've acquired $850,000 in GAM. And again, this is basically essentially just cap space. It's going to increase the Revs' overall total amount they can spend on the roster here. So net, they're up $250,000 this year in GAM. So if we add that on to the $2,585,000 that is allocated to them from MLS, their GAM this year is about $2.835 million. And then if we take that 10455 number, that increases to $10.705 million. All right, 10 minutes in, hopefully I haven't lost you. If you're completely lost on what we're talking about here, just know that the salary cap space plus GAM plus TAM is $10,705,000 that we know of. Again, sometimes allocation money can be rolled over if you don't spend all of it. I think it expires after three or four windows. Sometimes player salaries are paid by an old team, and we'll get to that in a little bit. There's also, you know, GAM that you acquire from the Champions Cup if you miss the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. There's also sometimes conditional GAM in trade. So this is based off of public data, but $10,705,000 is our best guess. All right. So that's essentially the nuts and bolts of what we're looking at for the Revolution's roster space. Now let's actually get into the contracts. This is the good stuff. Let's look at these players. Let's look at who's making a little bit too much, who's making a little bit too less. What are the good signs? What are the bad signs? Let's start with the designated players. Again, let's start here. All these players have a 683, 750 budget charge. All right. So Carlos Gil just signed a contract extension. He's making $4 million in salary, $4.45 million in comp. That is up from last year, $3.25 million. He made $3.5 million in total compensation last year. His extension runs through 2026, option for 2027. Not a lot of complaints here. He obviously is ticking up amongst the highest earners in MLS. He's been making steadily more and more every year, and it seems like every contract too. So gets a bit of a healthy bump by about $725 million from where he was last year. Not a huge complaint there. Thomas Shankalai, $950 in salary, $1.01 million in total compensation. This now worth noting that, you know, we talk about players that can be bought down. You can't, if you are making more than $1.683 million, so it's $1 million more than the maximum budget charge, you have to be a designated player. And Thomas Shankalai here is making $950 in salary and $1 million in total compensation. And by the way, I believe the total compensation is the number we want to be concerned with, because that includes signing fees, bonuses, et cetera, et cetera. So let's round it to $1 million. So you might be saying, well, why can't we buy down Thomas Shankalai from $1 million to below that budget charge, make him basically a TAM player or use GAM to buy him down. The problem is there's a transfer fee. It's similar to what we were talking about with Henrik Ravas, where his transfer fee, whatever he was acquired for, I think, again, it was $4 million. That's going to be allocated annually over his guaranteed contract. So when they exercised a purchase option on Tomas Chankalai, they're adding on at least $1 million, it seems like, to that salary budget hit. So even though he's in the $1 million range, and we probably could buy him down, that purchase option, the transfer fee, really changes the math and makes it an automatic designated player. Similar deal with Adam Buxa a few years ago. I think he was in the $1 million range, but the Revs spent $4 million to acquire him, and because of that, it added about $1 million onto his hit. So because of that, he had to be classified as a designated player. So Chankalai's contract, similar to Hill, through 2026 with a 2027 option. Giacomo Vrioni, $1.7 million salary, $1.95 million in total compensation. Again, over that maximum threshold, the designated player threshold. So he's going to be a designated player. None of these players can be bought down. The Rev and Vrioni is signed through 2025 with an option for 2026. So assuming there's no buyouts, these three are your designated players for this year and next year. That's just the plain and simple fact. No buyouts. You can't buy anyone down. If someone is telling you about buying down Chankalai, they are lying. They don't know. If someone's talking about buying down Vrioni, they're lying. They don't know. None of these guys can be bought down. So on top of that, we'll talk about our U22 player, Dylan Barrero. It is worth noting that MLS is potentially changing the rules of the roster rules so that teams can now have three designated players and three U22 players in the future. That hasn't been changed just yet. So we're going to assume that we're not going to really dig in too heavily into that. But with a U22 player right now, the Revs, if they have three designated players, they can have one U22 player, and that is Dylan Barrero. Automatically, this is a $200,000 budget charge based on Dylan Barrero's age. He makes $600,000 in salary, $664,000 in total compensation. Again, there's a transfer fee, but because he's automatically got that $200,000 budget charge, we're not too worried about it. U22 players have an unlimited transfer fee. The transfer fee doesn't basically add into the math. That's the benefit of being a U22 player, so that doesn't matter. Dylan Barrero is signed through the end of this year, option for 2025, so it'll be interesting to see if the Revs extend him next year, if they exercise their team option. Part of that might be based on his injury from this past weekend. We heard that it's just a knee contusion from Caleb Porter earlier this week. He is expected to play this weekend, which is positive, but obviously with the injury risks, it's going to be interesting to see if the Revolution keep Dylan Barrero. You know, if they add two U22 spots, maybe that increases the odds of Dylan Barrero being kept after this year. We'll see. Let's go through the rest of this senior roster. Again, I'm looking at the senior roster. So these players have their salary count against the cap, and we'll get into the supplemental roster later. This is just the senior roster, which is completely full, by the way. We have 20 players on the senior roster, according to some data that MLS released a few weeks ago. So there's Javier Arriaga, who they just acquired from Seattle, $775,000 in salary and compensation. His contract ends at the end of the year, but the Revs do have a team option. Ima Boateng, $155,000 in salary, $187,000 in comp. Again, his contract ends this year, 2025 option. It is worth noting in the press release that it was said he was signed to a supplemental contract, but he is listed on the senior roster according to data that MLS released, kind of like a roster snapshot, and he was listed on the senior roster. So I'm going to assume that's true, but it is interesting because Ima Boateng has been on the supplemental roster in years past. We'll get to that in a bit. Brandon Bai, $375,000 in salary, $394,000 in compensation. Contract ends this year, 2025 option. Andrew Farrell, $683,750 salary. And compensation, that number is even for both. His contract ends this year. He has a 2025 option. Now, I want to point out Andrew Farrell for one quick minute here. Last year, if you've been listening to us for a long time, when Andrew Farrell was signed to a contract, he was signed to a TAM deal, and we had a theory at the time that the reason, it didn't make a ton of sense to why Andrew Farrell was essentially getting a contract extension, which was really just the team adding on a one-year team option and giving him a raise to TAM levels, which is this 683 number for this year. And at the time, we thought this is actually kind of a brilliant move because the Revs have TAM that they're not going to spend. It was right before the season. So what they're doing is Andrew Farrell's already making his salaries in the 400s. If you can buy him up to, if you increase his salary to that TAM level, that min TAM level, that's 683,750, you can buy him down. You can spend, I think it's half of a player's salary. You can pay off with allocation money. So essentially at the time we said, you know, he's making 450, something like that. increase his salary to 683, and essentially you can cut his cap hit to by paying it off in TAM. You can pay half his salary as TAM, whereas you can't use TAM for his this 450 number. And the genius part of this is that essentially you're using a resource you may not have been using. But because Andrew Farrell had a team option for 2024 and you're adding on another team option for 2025, that was essentially his extension last year. You know, he had a contract last year that was through 2023 with a team option for 2024. The extension only was just adding on a team option for 2025. So the thought process was, well, bring him up to TAM this year, decline his option in the offseason, and then you can renegotiate and bring him back down to the previous level. It doesn't really hurt your team. Well, the team extended his option. The team exercised an option, and he's still making TAM money. So it's a bit confusing to me. I figured when they exercised the option, maybe his salary automatically dropped. Maybe this was just going, they were giving him a bump in 2023 just to tack on a team option. But no, it's actually, he's still up in that TAM level, which is still very high. It's similar to last year. It's very high this year. So confusing to me to why the team maybe didn't go to Andrew Farrell and said, we're going to decline your option and maybe renegotiate you back into that 400 level to kind of create some cap space. I don't know. So, but that's a number that jumps out to me and is a bit of a head scratcher because, as I say, I thought the table was set last year that they were going to basically renegotiate with Farrell on a year-to-year basis. And instead, they exercised the team option and he's still higher than he should be, in my opinion. So anyway, we'll get to that. The center backs are a mess. We'll expand on that later. Nacho Hill, $400,000 in salary, $421,000 in total compensation. Contract ends this year, team option next year. Ian Harkes, $275,000 in total salary, $287,000 in total compensation. Say it with me again. Contract ends this year, team option 2025. It is worth noting the press release said that Ian Harkes, when he signed with the team last July, it said there was a two-year option. So I thought it was for both this year and next year was guaranteed as well. But according to the roster data MLS released, it says there's a 2025 option. I don't know. We'll see. I'm a little questionable on the details here because we're getting mixed signals here. Dwan Jones, $787,000 in total salary, $793,000 in total compensation. He has a contract through 2027. He just signed a new contract. His salary is up big time from last year. He was $375,000 and $396,000 last year. So he basically doubled his salary year over year. Good for Dwan. Get that bag. Mark Anthony K, $750,000 in salary and compensation. He actually has a 2 years left on his deal. So he has 2024 and 2025, and there's a team option for 2026. This is a big deal. This is a big contract. He's in the TAM money, and this is a 2 year contract, basically. So that's going to be, that's a bit of a tough contract too, it seems like, for the Revs. So bit of a head, not a head scratcher, but just seems like they acquired a bit of a bad contract from Mark Anthony K. And yeah, we'll see where that one goes. In terms of buyout candidates, Mark Anthony K is on my list. He still is getting time, but I feel like if the Revs bring in another central midfielder like they were looking to with Baba in the past window, and Mark Anthony K seems to be on the way out, if MLS is allowing teams to buy out a second player, I think Mark Anthony K is definitely on that list since he has a guaranteed contract through next year as well. Henry Kessler. This is a head scratcher to me too. Signed a contract late last year, $1 million salary, $1.03 million in total compensation. This is for, his contract was for 2 years. So it's this year, next year, and a 2026 option. $1 million salary is a lot for a center back. Basically that's an all-star level player. And I kind of tried guessing around what was the, I tried projecting, what would I give Henry Kessler? And if I was the Revs, I think I projected a starting offer of $1,500,000, $600,000. Kessler played on his rookie contract year after year after year. So he was, I think, making $200,000 last year. And he really signed up to the point where his contract was about to expire. So I think the Revs negotiated a little bit too late in terms of extending Henry Kessler. And they basically just didn't want him to hit. He wouldn't have been a free agent. I think he would have gone to the re-entry draft, but they really clearly didn't want to go to free agency with him. But $1 million salary is, for a center back is all-star level. So, Kessler has had injury problems. I would have thought the Revs might've done a 1 year contract, as a kind of a bridge contract, which is kind of a show me year. And for Kessler, he would have hit free agency next year. I'm not sure he could have gotten a ton more than this, in free agency at the end of this year anyway. So, not a knock of the player, just a lot of money for a guy that's had injury problems over the past 2 years. And, you look at someone like Miles Robinson was a free agent. He signed for $1.43 million in salary, $1.58 million in total compensation. the Revs could have declined Andrew Farrell's option and passed on Kessler and gone after Miles Robinson for the same money. So it's kind of just $1 million salary. Again, it's not the top tier elite center backs. You know, Walker Zimmerman's making $3 million. But, you know, $1 million, you should be on the cusp of an all-star game. You should be one of the best center backs in the league. Not many center backs get that money. So just a little, that's a lot. That's a lot of money, and that's an Anolfo contract. So that's a head-scratcher. Nick Lima, $375,000 in salary and total compensation. His contract ends at the end of this year. And again, they spent some GAM to go get him. So that's an expensive depth piece. That's an expensive depth piece for the Revs. An awful move. Tommy McNamara, $435,000 in total salary and compensation. His contract ends at the end of this year, a 2025 option. Here's a head scratcher. Jonathan Mensah, $450,000 salary, $512,000 total compensation. His contract ends in 2024. He has a team option for 2025. He was signed last offseason. He was signed after Porter came in. You know, the center backs are all head scratchers. And, you know, you look at why, you know, we've been wondering why Dave Romney has been on the trade block. But if you look at the past 9 months, they signed Henry Kessler to a new contract, which in my opinion is an overpay. They exercised Andrew Farrell's option, which in my opinion is an overpay. They traded for Javier Arriaga, who Seattle essentially was just salary dumping. He's making $775,000. And then on top of this, they've got Jonathan Mensah on $450,000 and $513,000, which is again starter salary. So you have four starting center backs besides Dave Romney that you've acquired and or in some way you've brought into your team that's making starter money. You have five, and then you have Dave Romney, who's we're down here $675,000, $722,000 compensation. You have a ton of money committed to the center back position. You have five center backs making starter money. And I think Dave Romney is on the trade block because he's the most tradable of those pieces. His contract ends in 2024. He has a 2025 option. I don't understand why they gave Jonathan Mensah this contract. When he was brought in, I figured this was a depth center back, basically replacing Omar Gonzalez. Omar Gonzalez was on 425, and so at the time, my thinking was, well, you're bringing in Mensah, probably $250,000, $300,000, et cetera, et cetera. That's kind of what a backup center back, a reliable backup center back would make. The $450,000 salary and $513,000 total compensation for a guy that at no point have I thought it was going to start is real. I don't know what we're doing with this center back position. It just seems like they're committing to a guy every 2 or 3 months and then bringing in another one. So not sure this is very poorly planned at the center back position. And it'd be one thing if you dedicated, you know, I don't know what this is, $675,000, $775,000. So what, $3 million ish to five center backs. It'd be one thing if they were killing it. The Revs are at the bottom of the league in goals allowed. So, just very poor planning at the center back position. And I'm not impressed with this roster management here. Especially at the center back position, cause there's a lot of money spread out across five players. And I think again, Miles Robinson, $1.4 million in salary, $1.58 million in total compensation. Why don't you just go after? Why don't you combine two of these players' salaries and go after kind of more of a top player in the league? I don't know. Let's move on to some other players here. Matt Polster, $550,000 in salary, $592,000 in total compensation. Again, say it with me. Contract ends in 2024. Option in 2025. Henrik Rabas, $240,000 in salary, $267,000 in total compensation. He does have a contract through 2026 with a 2027 option. So unless he's bought out or he's transferred, he's here a while. It seems like he's gonna be the backup for 3 years. With the team acquiring Ivicic. Don't hate this number. This is fine for a backup. Again, there's a transfer fee, and we don't know exactly how much that is, so that's going to bring his cap hit up a little bit. So he is going to be a well-paid backup. That is going to be a resource that more resources to the backup goalkeeper than you'd want. But of course, there's also an international roster spot. But the 240 and 267 numbers don't totally scare me compared to some of the other center backs on this roster. Dave Romney, I already mentioned, $675,000 and $722,000. His guaranteed contract ends in 2024, and they have a team option for 2025, and they are shopping him. According to Tom Bogart, go listen to Tom Bogart, our interview from a few weeks ago, where he talks extensively about Dave Romney on the trade block. And then finally, in the senior roster, we have Bobby Wood making $450,000 and $471,000 in total compensation. His contract ends at the end of 2024. So let's add up all these numbers. What do we have? Based on the total salary number, that is $10,629,000. Based on the total compensation, it's $10,953,000. And again, I think we want to focus on the compensation number because that includes kind of some fees and stuff like that that I think goes into kind of the salary budget crunch. Now, going back to a few minutes ago, we talked about what's our total resources after all the GAM trades and whatnot. Total resources, which is our salary cap plus GAM plus TAM with all these players' salary and allocating the maximum player budget charge to the designated players and allocating $200,000 to Dylan Barrero. Based on that, we get those two the salary compensation numbers of 10.629 and 10.953. We have about $76,000 in total salary left in our cap space, and there's a $248,000 deficit based on the total compensation numbers. So we are right up against the cap. Now, again, there might be some additional GAM. Teams get an undisclosed amount of GAM for qualifying for Champions Cup. So I imagine that that goes into it as well. And again, some teams get conditional GAM. Some teams, cover certain salaries. And again, we'll get to that in a minute. So, but either way you slice it, and Caleb Porter has alluded to this and when he's talked to the media, the team is really up against the cap. There is no roster spaces. First off, there's 20 senior roster spots filled right now. And on top of that, it looks like they're using all of their resources, all of their GAM, all of their TAM. Again, maybe some rolled over, but it's they've not spent wisely in this past offseason. And a lot of people will say, well, they've had some contracts that really, Tommy McNamara, we signed him 2 years ago. Matt Polster. Well, you look at the 20-man roster here. You have Javier Arriaga that he just traded. You just traded for him. Ima Boateng was signed. Thomas Shankly was purchased. Andrew Farrell, you extended his option. Ian Harkes, you extended his option. Dewan Jones, you just signed an extension. Mark Anthony Kay, you traded for him last year. Henry Kessler, you just signed him at the end of last year. You traded for Nick Lima in the offseason. Jonathan Mensah, you signed in the offseason. Hendrick Gravis, you signed in the offseason. Bobby Wood, you extended his option. 11 of the 20 players on the senior roster here, they've recently added or extended and kept on this roster. So they've really done, really gone out of their way to keep this team together for the 2024 season. They've really done a good job kind of doubling down and essentially spending a premium to keep this team together, and the results are really not going their way whatsoever. So just really poor management. Really poor management, especially at the center back position. Let's go through the supplemental roster here just to kind of tie a bow on it. Ezmir Bakhtarovic, 115 salary, 121 compensation. Again, none of these numbers count against the cap. So we don't care how much these guys really make, but Ezmir signed through 2025 with an option for 2026. Noah Buck is making about $90,000 in salary and compensation, signed through 2025, 2026 option. Earl Edwards Jr., $155,000 in salary and compensation. Now, again, if you are a minimum player, if you are a senior player, but you're making the minimum amount, you can be moved to the supplemental roster. I'm confused why Earl Edwards Jr. qualifies at 155. And that's actually a similar number to Ima Boateng. He made 155 in salary and 187 in total compensation. Usually the minimum salary is like 90,000. So I'm a little confused to how Earl Edwards Jr. qualifies for this. I don't know if there's been a rule change that hasn't been made public. But that seems like he shouldn't be eligible for the supplemental roster, but according to data MLS released a few weeks ago, he is on the supplemental roster, so that's interesting. And since he is making a similar amount to Ima, I wonder if you can move Ima Boateng to the supplemental roster, similar to Earl Edwards Jr., if he also qualifies, because the Revs have moved some players up their supplemental roster in recent weeks, so maybe you can move Ima Boateng down. I don't know, supplemental roster, there's a lot of complicated rules to it, and so I don't want to dig too heavy into it, but maybe that is some way that the Revs can clear a roster spot. Malcolm Fry, $71,000 in salary, $73,000 in compensation. He's signed through 2026 with 2027 option. Ilaz Ivicic makes $385,000 in salary and $470,000 in total compensation. He has a contract through 2025. Now, he was waived by Portland. So what's happening here is Portland, they couldn't buy him out, or they didn't buy him out. They chose not to. They waived him, which basically means that they are cutting him a check to go away, and any team can sign him and cover a portion of that salary. So basically what the Revs have done here is they've signed him to a minimum contract. Portland still is covering the bulk of that number, that bulk of that salary, but the Revs are paying him the minimum so they can fit him onto the supplemental roster, which is a really nifty move for a starting goalkeeper. It's a great move. The Revs have him for 2 years. Even if he doesn't work out, it's really not costing them a lot. I believe it's cost them an international roster spot. That's really the only downside to this, but really, really great move. The Revs did something similar to with Ben Sweat last year. They're only paying him the minimum they needed to. The rest was by Sporting KC. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts to how that works out, where that's how Ivicic fits on the Supplemental roster, which is a major, major help for the Revolution. Peyton Miller, $71,000 in salary, $77,000 in compensation. He's signed through 2027 with a 2028 option. Ryan Spalding, about $90,000 in salary and compensation. This is a contract year for him, no option next year. The Revs are going to have to figure out what they're doing with Ryan Spalding. And maybe potentially a trade piece if a team needs a backup left back, needs an attacking left back coming off the bench, you know, with Peyton Miller waiting in the wings and you just committed to DeJuan Jones as well. Maybe Ryan Spalding is a person that another MLS team will take for an asset for next year or something like that. Santiago Suarez, our final player on the roster, $90,000 in salary, $103,000 in total compensation. He's signed through 2026 with a team option for 2027. Not included on the roster here, Damian Rivera. He's on loan to Tampa Bay. Jack Panioto, he's loaned to RIFC, and Joshua Bulma, he's been loaned to Revs 2. Teams can loan one player to Revs 2 as long as they don't make the game day roster, and it doesn't count against their salary. So those three right now don't occupy a supplemental roster spot because they are officially on loan. If they are brought back to the team, they have to have a supplemental roster spot for those three. So key takeaways here. Five center backs making more than $450,000 in salary and $513,000 in total compensation. Again, if you have a great, if you're committing, you know, just putting it another way too, you know, all right. So what's our total resources here? We said it was $10.7 million, $10.7 million, right? So if you have three designated players and they're all making 684, let's round that up to 700,000. That's 2.1 million of your cap is dedicated to designated players. And then you have a U22 player, that's 200,000. So $2.3 million of that 10.7 million is going to be allocated to designated players and U22 players. So really, you have $8.4 million to play with. And based on what we said here today, I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me, but it's around $3 million is dedicated to the center back position, not the left back position, not including DeJuan Jones, who's making $700,000. And that's not including Brandon Bye, who's making $400,000. And by the way, there's a team option for next year, but if you're going to negotiate a contract extension, if I'm Brandon Bye's agent, I'm looking at DeJuan Jones' salary, and I'm asking for something similar. So they might have to pay Brandon Bye if they want to keep him. So that doesn't include outside backs. It doesn't include Lima. It doesn't include Bye. It doesn't include DeJuan Jones. They're committing a ton to the center backs. Almost a third of their non-designated player and U22 resources are going to the center back position. And the results aren't great. Like, the results aren't great. And again, they seem to just make a decision. We're extending Kessler. We're committing Kessler. But also, we're going to extend the option on Andrew Farrell. But also, we're going to bring in Jonathan Mensah. Oh, you know, we're also going to bring in Arriaga. They seem to be going back on really big decisions again and again and again. We can also talk about the goalkeeper position. They bring in Vatsleek. They use their buyout on Vatsleek. They go out. They spend a transfer fee on Ravas, who takes up an international roster spot. Well, we're also going to go out and get Ivicic. Just seems to be back and forth, snip, snap, snip, snap. Poor roster management, especially at the center back position. Revs are seventh in salary in MLS. This is a good example of, you know, I know there was a narrative a few years ago about the Revs in 2021 when they were like 20th in spending in MLS. And some people said, well, this is just proof that the Revs are cheap. If your designated players are producing, you know, even if you're not spending a ton on designated players like they were with Heal and Bo and Buxa, those salaries weren't super high. You're not going to reach kind of the top of the MLS spenders chart. So the Revs were 20th back in 2021, but they're spending their money wisely. Here, the Revs doesn't seem like they're spending their money too wisely. Vrioni at $1.9 million is $1 million above where Buxa was. Heal is making, I think, around double of what he was back in 2021. So I know Shankalai is making less than Bo, but the point here being that the amount spent, the total amount in salary, doesn't always equal results, especially if you are not spending your money wisely, which the Revs haven't. Also, some people have talked about this being a rebuild for the Revs. This is more of a reset year for the Revs because of the lack of space they have. When Bruce Arena came into the Revolution in 2019, about 5 years ago, Mike Burns left the roster in a position where they had a lot of options, team options to be decided in the future, but they also weren't using their designated players. You know, Gustavo Bo's spot, you know, they had a spot for Gustavo Bo. They had a designated player spot for Adam Buxa. They had some resources available for Bruce Arena to go out and spend right away. There's really not a ton of space to spend right now. So this is more of a reset year where the Revs are going to have to find ways to move players out or wait until the end of the year when they can have the ability to decline some options and then rebuild their roster. So it's going to be a bit of a long process that's not going to be solved overnight, unfortunately. I know Caleb Porter talks about bringing 3-5 players onto the roster. That's going to require a lot of them going out, and I wouldn't be surprised if one or two players on the senior roster are waived, which means the Revs eat the salary, and as a result, they open up a senior roster spot. I also wouldn't be shocked to see players maybe being sent out with the Revs eating a certain portion of their salary, like if Tommy McNamara is traded out, but the Revs keep 70% of the salary for this year or something like that, just so the Revs save a few bucks. I really wouldn't be shocked to see that if it comes down to that. But a lot of decisions made in the offseason. The good news here is that they're not locked into too many contracts next year. Just for next year alone, on the senior roster, Arriaga, Boateng, Barrero, By, Farrell, Nacho Hill, Harks, McNamara, Mensah, Polster, Romney. Those are 11 players on the senior roster. 11 out of the 20 players on the senior roster have options for next year. No designated players, unfortunately, but there is some flexibility for the Revs to move some guys off if they don't have a strong role in the team. There's 12, including Earl Edwards Jr. too. So if Earl Edwards Jr., who's now the third goalkeeper, is moved, his option is declined, they're going to open up something on the roster spot. And also on top of that, you have some free agents and some players out of contract. Nick Lima and Bobby Wood are free agents. Ryan Spalding, I believe, doesn't qualify for free agency yet. I think he'd go to the re-entry draft. And Damian Rivera, too. Those guys, actually, Damian Rivera might have 5 years of MLS. I'd have to do the math there. But either way, those four players are out of contract. So Lima would also would clear spots off of the senior roster. So you have potentially 13 spots on the 20-man senior roster that you can turn over in the offseason if you would like to. Right now, there's also no international roster spots available. The Revs have 5 international roster spots. As I mentioned earlier, they traded away 3 before the season. Those spots go to Barrero, Shankalai, Nacho Hill, Ivicic, and Ravas. So the Revs have no international roster spots. They have to move one of those guys off, or one of those guys has to get their green card before they can go out and get another international player. All right. So what can the Revs do? I've painted a bit of a bleak picture. This is truthfully probably the worst shape the Revs roster has been, kind of from a salary perspective, since I've been following this and since this data has been available. All 20 roster spots are filled. Again, maybe you can move even Boateng down to supplemental, but who knows. You could waive some players to open up the spots, but that doesn't help you with the cap space, which again seems like we're really close to it. We're really hitting the cap there. Those players with team options might be tempting to other teams. So I mean, if the Revs are really looking to move people, like I know they're looking to move Dave Romney. He has a guaranteed contract through the end of the year, but there is a team option for 2025. So it's possible, because that team option kind of gives teams a little bit of leverage to either extend their contract at a set number, or you could maybe negotiate with the player if they want to stay. They don't really have the player has a little less leverage in that situation. Dave Romney seems to be on the trade block. Brandon Bye, when he comes back from injury, you know, if he plays well, Is he a trade piece for this team? Because again, maybe the Revs don't want to extend him and sign him to a contract and give him the money that DeJuan Jones just got. Maybe you trade him and get some allocation money for 2025 back if you're looking to sell pieces. So again, these are things that wouldn't help the team out this year, but for 2025, maybe you can build your assets. Maybe you can increase your cap space, increase your resources, and kind of help in the rebuild next year. But you look at those guys, Ima Boateng, Polster, By, you know, those are all guys that have team options for next year. Maybe other teams will find them valuable and trade an asset for them. Does Wood and Spalding, who have contracts ending at the end of this year, could you get something for them? In Wood's case, could you trade him and maybe eat half his salary and get maybe a draft pick back and at the very least create $250,000 of his $400,000 in salary? Could you open up that space? So there's a lot of decisions we made for the Revs, and they don't really have a ton of good options. It is worth noting that they could get some U22 spots. The MLS might change their rules this summer to allow for 2 U22 players similar to Dylan Barrero come in, which would allow the Revs to spend an unlimited transfer fee on these players. Those players would have to be limited in age and salary, but those would only be a $150,000 to $250,000 salary hit. So if you are able to open up some cap space, or if the Revs do have some additional GAM we don't know about, maybe if you waive a player, or you can move a player down, even Boateng down to the supplemental roster, maybe you can bring in a U22 player. But again, I think there's going to be a lot of surgery needed to be done to this team. So it's not great. So yeah, that's the outlook on the Revolution for this year. Not a lot of options for the Revs going forward. It's going to be a very interesting summer window. Expect to see a lot of activity. If you're going to see a lot of activity in, I imagine you're going to see some activity out. Similar to last year, I did this episode, and I mentioned in order to clear up some space, you probably have to buy out Jozy Altidore. I think something similar is going to have to happen where if MLS gives you a second buyout, you're probably going to have to buy out someone. You may have to waive some people. You may have to eat some salary. It's going to be a bit depressing. So with all that being said, that ends it for the salary data discussion. If you have a question, I know you guys have questions. I know this is a very dry topic, and I know I'm throwing a ton of information out as fast as I can. But if you have a question, please feel free to email us at revolutionrecap@gmail.com or reach out to us on social media, on Twitter or on Instagram.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, everyone, it's Seth Maycumber from the Blazing Musket. Happy to be joined once again from a guest from MLS Season Pass. This week it is Miguel Gallardo, who will be on the Spanish call this weekend when the Philadelphia Union comes to town to Gillette Stadium. Miguel, it's becoming a weekly question. I just got to open it up with a very interesting one. No one can figure this out. The Revolution are 2-8-1 on the season. It's not what they expected. What is going on with the New England Revolution, Miguel?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one and a really surprising one, to be honest. And I think a lot of us that have been following the league for a while, that have been following New England Revolution for a while, we can have our thesis, we can have, you know, ideas, we can have, you know, opinions as to why, you know, things could be happening. But it is ultimately, it is sad because, you know, when there was, when they didn't have a coach yet, there was a lot of teams without a coach this offseason, oddly enough, right? And I always thought that this was one of the most attractive ones out of any teams available for anyone to come in and coach, because I do think that New England Revolution has a lot of quality. I mean, when you have Carles Gil, that's an automatic attraction, you know, for any coach to go play with one of the best players in the league. Chancalay, you know, when he came in the middle of the season, in the past, immediately he started to show some real quality, you know, as a potential replacement for Gustavo Bo, who's obviously had seen his best days, but for me, one of my favorite players in Major League Soccer. And then you have other really good pieces. I think, if I'm being honest, I think there's a lot of things that are happening. One, unfortunately, Rabas has not been a good replacement for Petrovic, who I think is one of the best goalkeepers that's ever played in Major League Soccer. Obviously, that was a big hit for New England Revolution, because even in the year when they were smashing records, they did have a lot of deficiencies defensively, and they were covered by the goalkeepers. And before him, it was Matt Turner. Another thing that I think has happened for New England Revolution has been the fact that you haven't had Brandon Bye or DeJuan Jones playing in the position where he's best at, in the side where he's best at. And I think that one of the biggest attributes for New England Revolution in the past has been the way they attack. The best defense is a good attack, because you put teams under pressure. You make teams that are dangerous defend. And so when you had Brandon Bye and DeJuan Jones on both sides just getting forward, and then having to have wingers for opposite teams have to think about their positioning and having to chase them, I think that that used to put a lot of teams under a lot of stress and limit their attack. Now you don't really have a lot of threat through the wide areas, because you don't have those overlaps and underlaps from these players. And then when you add some stress, then you put more pressure on the back line. And, you know, at Farrell, for me, I think he's a solid player. Romney, I think he's a solid player. Kessler, he's still very young, I think he's a solid player. I don't think any of them are, you know, starting, you know, best 11 caliber. They're good collectively. I don't think individually they are, you know, top level players in the league. Even when New England Revolution was at their best, I just think that defensively they were solid because they had two players that attacked a lot. They had goalkeepers that masked some of the deficiencies. And then you had a very potent attack with you know, the Buchanan era, obviously Carles Gil, and then Buxa, who was incredible. I know I'm going a little bit ways back, but I think we tend to compare the teams to their best versions recently. And for me, that was the best version of New England Revolution in the last 2 or 3 years. And so now they're in a situation where I think emotionally they're going through a lot of stuff because of what's happened last year. You have a coach that comes in and immediately criticizes to a certain extent some of the things that were being done before. And I'm not sure that a lot of the players from New England Revolution were necessarily happy about the way things went down. So when you have a coach that at least publicly comes in to criticize some of the things that happened in the past, I think he's going to rub some people the wrong way. And look, I'm not in there to see what's happening culturally, but you can't tell from the outside looking in that I don't think that there's a unity on this team that has that can maybe allow them to get out of this tough stretch. So then they can stop getting better results. And of course, lastly, I'll say Carles Gil, when you don't have players around him that can feed him the ball properly, when he doesn't get the ball in good areas, when he doesn't have to be so worried about the team not conceding goals, then you're limiting one of the best players in the league. And when you do that, you're automatically going to be less sharp in the final third. And I mean, I think I went on a rant, but I think those are some of the things that could be going wrong with a New England Revolution.
Miguel, I think you covered it well there. I think there's a lot to kind of dissect. And when I think about this New England Revolution side, there's that perfect storm of how this season began. Like, you needed things to start looking good from the beginning, right? You have a new coach coming in, trying to, you know, change this roster a little bit, try to play a different style, but you're also playing a game every 3 days because of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. And then you have this big marquee match against Lionel Messi and Inter Miami, and they're getting sick the night before. And you have injuries to Brandon Bye that we already know about, but then DeJuan Jones gets injured, and there's so many things at play that's happening. Plus, you're thinking about the culture a little bit. You're trying to put in that style. You're talking about a team that through 11 games, they've used 11 different lineups, right?
Sure.
And that kind of gives us an idea of like, hey, they need a little stability, need something to kind of go their way. Caleb Porter talked about last week against the Red Bulls that was actually a pretty good game on the attacking end.
Sure.
He said on the defensive end, not so much. It was their fourth best mark when it came to expected goals. They scored 2 goals for the first time this season. When you look at that Red Bulls performance, what are you seeing out of it? Is it something to build on for Caleb Porter?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, there's no doubt that there's quality with Carles Gil, with Chankalai. You know, Brioni finally, you know, I thought he had a pretty good game. That's another player that I think has left a lot to be desired, especially because of the tag that he came in with, right, as a designated player. But I don't think we've seen yet the best version of him, and he needs to perform to take some pressure away from Carles Gil, Chankalai, you know, from Bajrtarević and Nacho Gil when he comes in. But I thought they did some really nice things. They obviously attacked more. But look, it goes back to what I was saying. They get a new goalkeeper, makes two or three key saves. That gives you confidence. That allows you to be more confident going forward. Of course, Arriaga coming in, I think, has been a good addition. You know, Farrell's, you know, slot into the right back position. Again, I think you have a relatively solid defender on the right hand side, but I don't think you still don't have the attack that you had in the past, or maybe Nick Lima can give you there, or the Juan Jones can give you there. But as I said, you're right in the sense of they had a lot of volume of games. Again, they were not the only team that had all those games. And I think there's just too many things happening at the same time, you know, and now that they've been without that Wednesday, Saturday, the last 2 or 3 weeks after they were disqualified. I mean, that's the hope, that you start to see a little bit more performances out of them, like the way you saw against Red Bull, because Red Bull, let's just face it, they're a contender. And so if you're able to put a good performance against a Red Bull, then I think, you know, you definitely take some positives out of it. But ultimately, this is about getting results. And we're already past one third of the season. And yes, I know that Sporting Kansas City last year didn't win the first 10, but I think it was a different situation. I think they had more injuries in different situations. I do think that for New England Revolution, it's more about getting the team on the same page tactically, culturally. And then, as I said, they have enough quality to be able to start pulling results and maybe get a little momentum and then start to get close to the teams up top.
Yeah, I said this after the game. It's a okay result if we're talking like preseason early in the year or something like that, right? Like if you go down to Red Bull and 4-2 wasn't necessarily a fair score line, given what happened. It's a score line. Like it doesn't go away. Like you have to recognize it. But when you're one third in the season, it hurts a little bit more because you have to start getting points. They're not out of it. They still have opportunities to like rise up, but like it's a decent performance, but it's also a performance where you need to get a result, much like the Toronto games we saw earlier. You know, like you got to get results if you put in some of those performances. I'm curious from your point of view. We're talking about that back line in this past week. You know, Dwan Jones isn't there. You move Nick Lima over to the left hand side. I think it's a little bit of a hard assignment because he's right footed. We also see Henry Kessler play as a left center back, and he's right-footed. He can play at his left. I remember he used to have competitions with Dwan Jones about using his left foot.
Yeah.
But you also have a guy like, you know, Romney, who is left-footed. What is it like when you have, you know, those players who are more right-footed playing on the left-hand side? Does that kind of change the game a little bit in your mind?
Yeah, absolutely. It changes a lot, first, in how you want to play out. Right. If you do want to play out of the back, you need a left footed player, right footed player, depending on what you're trying to do tactically on how to progress the ball forward. Also, when having to defend in space, you know, the way they use their body to be able to, you know, be in a better position, in a more balanced position. There's definitely something to it, you know, especially even more for fullbacks, right? Because the idea of the fullbacks, if you want them to attack, and Nick Lima is an attacking fullback, is to overlap and put some crosses into the box. But obviously now, playing inverted, that limits a little bit. Now he has to play a little bit more central. And if, you know, Chankalai tends to come inside as well, then you need some width. And who's going to give you that width? An inverted player, sometimes naturally, they don't give you that just because, you know, they're inverted. You know what I mean? So there is a little bit of difference there. But again, I think it's just him trying to figure out what his best partnership of center backs is going to be. And look, Romney, I think, is a fantastic player. I mean, the dude is insanely healthy. He just doesn't ever get hurt. He's just like, I mean, made out of, you know, steel. But obviously, Kessler's young. Arriaga is young. Arriaga comes from a team that's used to winning things with Seattle Sounders. And I do like that partnership a lot. And it's good to have options. And Farrell to play center back when Brandon Bye gets back, when Devon Jones gets back. And also, you know, Romney as an experienced player, as a veteran player. But I do think defensively they were lacking a lot, especially pace. You know, if you think about it, with Farrell, with Ronnie, you were lacking pace. And the reality is nowadays in Major League Soccer, if you don't have pace in the back line, you're going to struggle. So especially the way they wanted to play, which is, you know, credit to Caleb Porter, credit to Bruce Arena when he was. New England Revolution has always been a team that likes to attack. They like to get forward, you know. Polster, making those late runs. I think that's something that's not talked about enough. But I've noticed when I've called a couple of New England Revolution games, I knew at some point Polster is going to, you know, make a run into the box and score a goal or make something happen. And those are things that are very interesting tactically. And Marc-Anthony Kay, look, I don't think we've seen the best version of him since he left LAFC. But listen, as I hear myself talk, I have to be excited if I'm a New Revolution fan, but I gotta see it in results because, you know, like you say, good performances, they're fine in preseason. You're getting encouraged, always has some nice attacking pieces. But like last game, let's take last game for instance. Okay, they come back, they score a nice goal to make it 3-2, but then you lose concentration and they score a goal on you with literally two or three passes. And, you know, Harper is completely isolated and it was an easy goal for him when you were trying to chase the game. And I totally get that, but you gotta find balance. And I think there's still a lot of work to be done, but I do like the pieces that they're bringing in. Ivacic, the goalkeeper, I think he's going to be a really nice piece. It's unfortunate that Bravas did not turn out to be what they wanted him to be. Maybe still early. Maybe he does get another opportunity. I don't know. But I do think there's enough pieces to be able to move forward and get better as a team.
Yeah, I think that what you're saying about the back line is really important. You got to kind of create some stability, create some relationships. Arriaga's doing a good job communicating, working with Kessler. Kessler's done a nice job being a little bit more patient with his buildup. So we're seeing some partnerships kind of forged there. I do. You mentioned him a few times. I know you yourself was a goalkeeper. I do want to talk about this idea that the Revolution have had three goalkeepers so far. It seems like they are settled on Ivacic. Ivacic, to me, has been very good. He made that big stop against Chicago. Very good with his feet. I'm actually really impressed with his ability to play out in that way. Really comfortable. So when you look at this, my two questions here. One, how difficult is it to kind of keep switching as a goalkeeper to know, like, I'm not the goalkeeper. Maybe I am the goalkeeper. And then two, what do you see in Ivacic that makes him the guy to go forward? Because Porter said he is the guy going forward.
Yeah, well, it is very difficult for a goalkeeper not to know if every Saturday you're going to play or not. You know, you need that confidence from your coach. And I think Caleb Porter saying that Ivacic is going to be the starting goalkeeper moving forward, that's going to do good things for Ivacic because, you know, you want to come into a team and you want to have a place. And yes, you want to fight for your spot. But at the same time, you want to have confidence that you want to reduce the level of stress for a goalkeeper. Because the mentality is different. You know what I mean? I know with like field players, you want that competition. You know, you want to keep everybody on their toes. That makes you work really hard and all these things. But with the goalkeeper, you need stability. You need confidence. You need calmness. While everybody is 100 miles an hour, the goalkeeper needs to know that he's going to be calm. His place is secure, and that security is only backed by results and performances. And so I think that's really positive that Caleb Porter already has mentioned that to Ivacic. Look, he gave Ravas a chance. It wasn't like he was changing in every other game. He was playing most of the games consistently, and I thought that there was a lot of deficiencies in his game. I mean, I called a preseason game between New England Revolution and Orlando City, and there was two or three plays that were crosses, and his timing coming out was very you know, I thought they needed a lot of work. And I thought to myself, right, maybe he's young. Maybe he's not that young. You know, maybe he's just getting the timing right and all these things. But those are things that I also called a preseason game with Petrovic versus Orlando City 2 years ago. And the dude was an absolute beast since day one. And you knew, I could tell right away that Ravas wasn't necessarily going to be the quality of goalkeeper that Petrovic was. But you were hoping that he was going to be serviceable, right? And unfortunately for him, that hasn't been the case. It's good that Ivacic is going to come and have some stability. Yes, he is good with his feet. I think he's proven that he is a very good goalkeeper. I don't know exactly the situation that happened in Portland because I don't see Kripo as somebody that's a lot better than Ivacic or better, if I'm being honest. And I think the results this year have shown that, right? With Portland, because they've been struggling, one of the teams that has conceded the most goals. But look, Ivacic has got what it takes. I think he's a very good goalkeeper. I think he's a veteran of the league. I think he's good with his feet. He's got good shot abilities. You know, and the fact that now, you know, he's got the confidence from Caleb Porter, I think that's going to be good for him and the back line.
Yeah, I've seen from Ivacic. And I think you mentioned two goalkeepers in the past with Turner and with Petrovic. They saved you games. And Ravas... Yeah, and Ravas wasn't saving you games. He was costing you games. Like, his distribution wasn't quite there, and they want to play out of the back. He was flailing and not being able to grab the ball. And so I think even already, he potentially gave you 3 points, against the Chicago Fire. we mentioned this idea of his ability to play out of the back. And he talked about how he played futsal. That's the reason in the offseason he plays futsal, and that's why he's good at it. I feel like there's an ongoing debate about goalkeepers. Like, obviously, the most important thing about goalkeepers is keeping the ball out of the back of the net. But should goalkeepers also be good with the feet? Like, if, in your own opinion, as being a goalkeeper, where do you stand? Does that even matter if you're able to be able to keep the ball with your feet?
Yeah, no doubt. That's a really good debate, honestly. And, you know, I, in my playing time, that was one of my strongest attributes. I was pretty good with my feet. And, you know, that made up for some of my deficiencies, you know, which could have been, you know, maybe my reaction saves. I don't know, but that was very important to me. Look, here's what I'll say is, I think sometimes people think that a goalkeeper that's good with their feet is somebody who's very good technically. And I think most goalkeepers have good quality, good technical abilities. But I don't think that it's something that you can truly work and increase a lot or change a lot in a play in a goalkeeper that's already a professional goalkeeper, because I do think it's a wire. I do think it's the way you were developed. I do think that you can improve your technical ability, but it's more about the decision making and understanding the system and understanding risks versus reward in trying to play a through ball to break a line, or being able to see that if I skip a line and play to my fullback, you know, on the by the flank, there's space for him to go forward and start exploiting some spaces. I think what I don't like to see is coaches that want to force a goalkeeper to play in a situation that they're not comfortable in, because that always backfires. I'll give you an example. Look at Callander from Inter Miami. He's given up some goals because he's tried to do things that he's not wired to do, or at least we haven't seen him do in the past. And every now and then the plays will come out okay, but every now and then, and I think more often they're not, when they're not used to playing this way, they will give up costly goals. And so I agree with you. The number one priority is to be able to keep the ball out of the net. I think if a goalkeeper is comfortable with their feet and help you keep you in possession rather than build through you and give that responsibility to the goalkeeper to have to build, then I think it's very, very serviceable. But again, it's about risk and reward. How important is it for my goalkeeper to be able to break lines? Or how important is it for my goalkeeper to be able to keep the ball out of the net? And that's why the guys that can do both get paid the big bucks. And we're talking about Alisson in Liverpool. We're talking about, you know, some of the, you know, the highest quality goalkeepers in Europe that can do both. But it's very difficult to find those guys. And here in Major League Soccer, I think that you have a few that can do it both. But you know, for me, it's about not forcing a situation when the goalkeeper is not completely comfortable in the way they play.
So you're a goalkeeper, a former goalkeeper. Let's ask you some quick questions about goalkeeping. What is one thing that people don't understand about the goalkeeping position?
That playing for a team that has possession of the ball more often than not, that high presses, is a lot more difficult than playing for a team that sits back and makes six or seven saves, because the decision making is a lot less and all you're doing is reacting. And, you know, sometimes I think we praise goalkeepers that play for teams that sit back and they make fantastic saves. But, I mean, for me, the best goalkeepers are the goalkeepers that can play for teams that are dominant, that are protagonists with the ball. And because they'll only see the ball once or twice or even three times, and a lot of those times it's two goals, but they prevent a lot. I think those are the best goalkeepers, the goalkeepers that can prevent plays by staying connected to their line, by coming to collect the cross when there's, you know, two or three really good players from the opposite team inside the box. I think those are sometimes some of the best qualities in a goalkeeper often go unnoticed. It's goalkeepers that can prevent and goalkeepers that can play for teams that are dominant, because the amount of times you see the ball is less, but when you see it, it's in dirty ways, meaning counterattacks, set pieces, breakdowns, giveaways, because of the game model. You know, I think it's a lot easier to play for a team that plays more pragmatic and more conservative, because the decision-making process is a lot less than that when your team is constantly on the ball and your concentration levels have to be through the roof. And not all goalkeepers are crazy.
I was about to ask that question. You've heard the stereotype, obviously. The rumor is that goalkeepers are a little different. Do you agree or disagree?
No, I would agree. We're definitely different. I mean, to make a conscious decision to stand – you know, in front of the ball and have really good players pepper the ball at you, there's got to be something wrong with you. So to start off there, yes, we are crazy.
I think I know your answer to this one. The New England Revolution have two really good goalkeepers in their history, maybe even more if you throw in Matt Reese and some other individuals. But the two most recent one, which one are you taking, Georgi Petrovic or Matt Turner?
That's a really tough one, really tough one. But I think Petrovic is a more complete goalkeeper than Matt Turner. I think Matt Turner is a phenomenal shot stopper. I think he's decent with the ball at his feet. And I think the biggest thing with Matt Turner is his ability to stay calm in high pressure moments. But Petrovic, for me, is one of the most complete goalkeepers I have ever seen in Major League Soccer. He can do it all. His reactions, his calmness, his leadership, his ability to play with the ball, his air, his ability to come and collect balls in the air. I think the fact that he went to play in Europe was no surprise to anybody, because I think he is a very, very complete goalkeeper.
So Miguel, this weekend, Philadelphia Union come to town. They're all big games when you're at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, when you're in the bottom of the league. The Revolution need a result. They need a win this weekend. They won't have Tomas Csonkalé. In your mind, what do the Revolution need to do to get a result against the Philadelphia Union?
Yeah, well, the good thing about the Reds is that Philadelphia Union is probably in one of the lowest moments they've been in a long time. I actually sort of predicted that Orlando City was going to be able to beat them, just because I remember we were doing the pregame show in the beginning of the season, and we were talking about teams, and I remember saying that I thought the Philadelphia Union were going to struggle. And the reason why I said that was because I don't think they got better this year. They didn't bring a player that was going to take him to that extra step that they were missing, right? Because, you know, we've known Philadelphia Union to be a solid team, a very generous team defensively, in their efforts to defend as a unit, their efforts to attack as a unit, their efforts to high press as a unit. I think they know their system very well, that 4-4-2 diamond, that when they got away from it a little bit last year, they struggled a little bit. But this year, I don't think Carranza is the player that he was last year. He's also dealing with, am I staying, am I leaving? And do I want to go to Europe? Do I not want to go to Europe? I mean, I don't know what's going on there. Gazdag has to think he's taking a little step back. Wagner, he hasn't been as dominant as he was last year. And I don't think that they got any better players this year. I think the improvement for Philadelphia Union is hoping that their academy players become better because they're more experienced. And I think that is happening. McGlynn, Sullivan, and a lot of those players obviously are a year older. They're getting more experience. But I don't think that this is a team that has game changers, except for Carranza, who's not at the great moment. So for me, New England Revolution, what do they got to do is, I think, put them under pressure. Put him under pressure a ton. Find a way to get away from Brujo Martinez. Find a way to get the ball to Carlos Gil in areas where Brujo Martinez is going to, you know, get out of his position, because the way they defend, the way they play, what the Venezuelan does is very important. And so if you can get him out of position 14, you can get Carlos Gil on the ball in those areas. I think that you can have a lot of success against them. But I do think that this is a good time for New England Revolution or anybody to be facing Philadelphia Union, because, you know, I do think that they'll pick it up and they'll start getting better. But, you know, they've lost at home, Orlando and other teams. I think it's going to be very difficult for them moving forward.
We'll see what happens this weekend at 7:30 at Gillette Stadium. Miguel will be there. Miguel's a busy man. You can see the calls coming in and the texts coming in. Miguel, thank you so much for taking the time.
You got it. Take care. Okay. Good luck.
Thanks again to Miguel for joining us today, and thank you to Seth Maycomber of the Blazing Musket for that interview. Make sure you're subscribed to the Blazing Musket for daily Revolution coverage. And also thank you again to our sponsor, BetOnline. BetOnline, where the game starts. We'll be back with a new podcast following the Philadelphia game this weekend. Thank you everyone for listening, and go Revs.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.